All right, here's another quick take with the Real Estate Law Podcast. Jason Muth here with Straightforward Short-Term Rentals and Pride Away Stays. We love hosting all of our experts on this podcast because we get like this postgraduate education in real estate law, financial planning, and just lots of great info that we either have to like dig up ourselves or pay people a lot of money for their time to be able to explain it to us. In this episode, we're talking to Tony Uncle, who is with the Entrust Group. Tony was talking about self-directed IRAs, and we've heard it a lot on real estate podcasts that people could use their self-directed IRAs and retirement accounts to purchase real estate. Now, yes, you can, but there are a lot of rules about when you can participate in actually improving that property, meaning you can't. You can't even really paint the walls. You're not even supposed to stay there if the real estate is actually in your self-directed IRA. So you want to make sure that you're following the rules really closely because there could be a lot of penalties, tax penalties, and repercussions if you're not doing that. However, this is a great way to invest in real estate. If you are listening to this and you've been working for a long time, a number of years, you have some money saved up in an old 401k that you could roll over into an IRA. You know, if that is a self-directed IRA, you might be able to use that in the real estate world instead of using, you know, index funds and traditional assets. It's just something to think about. It might not be for everybody, you know, especially because in the real estate world, if you're doing short-term rentals, you like to stay in these places yourselves because, you know, that's part of the allure. If they're long-term rentals, you're probably not staying in those properties yourselves, but you are probably working on those properties. And those are a couple cardinal rules against being able to do that using your self-directed IRA for real estate investing. With that said, though, it is something that a lot of people are doing and a lot of people are at least exploring. So we will link the full episode in the show notes and enjoy this quick take with Tony Uncle.
Well, Roth IRAs are great because you don't pay taxes on your distributions. You're paying your taxes on the contribution to the IRA. So all of your gains over those years when you disperse that at retirement age will be tax-free. So there's a potential to grow significant wealth within a Roth IRA, Roth 401k, Roth HSA, anything like that.
Okay. And then, you know, with these investments, they're controlled. So you talked about some of the things that you can't do with it. Mm-hmm. The other thing I found kind of noteworthy from your materials are that there are certain people that the account is prohibited from transacting with. Who are those people and why is that a rule?
Sure. Those are called disqualified persons. And those disqualified persons will be yourself and your lineal descendants. So yourself, your parents, your grandparents, your children, your grandchildren, and all spouses associated with those individuals. You are not allowed to enter a transaction with any of those within your IRA. Why it's prohibited? Most of those could be the beneficiary of the IRA or directly benefit from that investment today. And that's, these retirement accounts are for retirement age. And take a little step further, one of the prime examples of a disqualified person, especially in the rental market, is if you have children in college or you want that vacation home and your IRA purchases it, you are disqualified or prohibited from renting that to a family member. So if it's at a college university, you can't buy a off-campus housing and rent it out to your child while they're there. If it's a vacation home in a tropical location, you can't have that to your IRA rented out for, you know, 50 weeks and then go spend 2 weeks yourself there. That's a direct benefit today.
So actually, tell me about that. So if you use this to purchase a second home or kind of an Airbnb short-term rental operation, you are prohibited from staying there. Is
correct.
That right?
You're not only you're prohibited from staying there, you're prohibited from providing any what they call sweat equity. So you can't paint walls, you can't change light bulbs, you can't cut the grass. You would have to hire a third party, non-disqualified party to do that and paid for with either your IRA funds or the income you generated from that asset. So it's best any IRA-owned property, keep an arm's length distance from that at all times.
So actually, that's news to me. So even, you know, as a short-term rental investor, I've kind of used to going into a space and hiring out the big things, but going out there and, you know, arranging things for myself the first time, certainly painting, and that kind of transaction is not a good fit for this.
According to the IRS code, that is correct. It's a violation.
All right. And so you're also, I guess that answers the other question I had pre-written for you is, you know, I'm used to, for tax purposes, thinking about maintenance days and you go to a short-term rental. If you go up there for the purpose of maintaining the property, then it doesn't count as a personal fair use day. But you're saying here that all of that's prohibited.
Well, that's all. Any sweat equity or any direct involvement in that property is a prohibited transaction.
what does enforcement look like for things like that? And how it, what would be the consequence if somebody made a mistake, used the property the wrong way, or engaged in an improper transaction?
Sure. Well, any prohibited transaction is going to have a penalty. It's a distribution of your retirement account, and the whole account becomes taxable. Usually when there is a prohibited transaction with a disqualified party, there could be a fine levied. Every case is different. We really have to sort exact IRS cases where this has happened. Are people violating it? I'm sure they are. Is the risk worth the reward? Absolutely not.
Okay. So, you know, so I'm kind of picturing a different thing here. So this is certainly not, you know, you have an opportunity to buy a family property and turn it into a rental property. That is improper. It's not a good fit for really active investors who want to get out there and put in sweat equity. So, you know, a lot of the people that I work with, but I'm picturing kind of the interstate investments where you live in the Northeast and might buy a property in the South, sure. Where from the very beginning, you're in the habit of hiring a property manager to manage.
Correct. That works perfectly fine. And, you know, it's not saying you can never take possession of the property. You can own that. You know, I'm in the Northeast as well. So South Florida is the go-to retirement destination. Mm-hmm. So theoretically speaking, if I were to purchase a home in South Florida in my IRA today, I would keep that as a rental property until my retirement age. And then at that time, I take the property as my distribution, where we retitle the property from the IRA to myself personally. If it's a traditional IRA, I'll pay tax on that distribution, which is the property value. And then at that time, I'm free and clear to move into that property.
So that's interesting. So that actually opens up my early question of, you know, who should be doing this to kind of a broader range of people, people who are planning for their retirement in more than just one way. So if you have the opportunity to buy that condo in South Florida, we've kind of talked about now a little bit of the specifics. Can you, you know, share, you know, without disclosing client information, but some ways that you've seen this, you know, seen clients use a self-directed IRA?
Sure. I mean, the kind of the example I just gave, I've had multiple of my clients buy that either South Florida, Costa Rica, Mexico property. Those are like the three big vacation spots that we see. They've either Airbnb'd it, fixed it and flipped it, or, you know, held it on for the rental. And then they took that distribution when they turned 59 and a half, mm-hmm. or they started taking partial distributions over the year, so you don't have the big tax burden all at once. And then they were able to successfully retire in that resort location without having to go out and buy a property that day. So they were able to earn some income off of that over X amount of years and then retire with that income and the property.
With these, we talked about, you know, who should be doing in the context of who should be using their IRA to purchase a rental property in their, you know, that's theirs to indirectly control. Mm-hmm. But this opens up the... Using a self-directed IRA opens things up to a wider range of people. Kind of always wondered where some people get the money to make relatively big contributions to syndication deals, to lend money out as, you know, small-scale lenders. You know, I've always been curious where people pull this money from.
Where is the money coming from?
So
let's touch on a little contribution rules real quick. So if you're starting from scratch and your first IRA is going to be a self-directed IRA for alternative investments, you're under the age of 50, you can only contribute $6,000 to that account this year. Next year, it bumps up to $6,500. If you're over 50 years old, the IRS is nice enough to give you an additional $1,000, so you can contribute $7,000. You're not buying a whole lot at $7,000. So where do these six-figure self-directed IRAs come from? Well, they come from your 401ks, which is why I mentioned earlier that most of our clients are towards the older generation, where you've built up that six-figure 401k from your old jobs, and then you can actually access that money. You roll it out of the old company plan into a self-directed IRA. No taxes, no penalties with that rollover. And now you have your six-figure self-directed IRA to go out and deploy as you wish.
Okay.
Or you have IRAs from when you were younger at, you know, your brokerage account that's been in the market and they were significantly able to grow over years, where you've amassed a nice sized IRA, we'll just say like a Charles Schwab or something. From there, you could liquidate that account, transfer the cash over to the self-directed IRA, no tax, no penalty, and then deploy that into the alternative space.
Okay. So you're not going to, you know, as a W-2 employee, open up an IRA, throw in $6,000 and wait 100 years for you to get enough money to really have.
It'll take you some time to amass that, yes.
Okay, so the bulk of it's coming from you know, 401k rollovers.
401k rollovers or significant IRA transfers. Now, where how those IRA transfers originated, at one point somebody did at a certain age open an account and make the minimum contribution, and they invest it in compound interest over years, was able to have them grow. So if you're listening and you're 18, 19, 20 years old, no retirement account, there's nothing stopping you from opening an IRA, whether traditional or Roth, and make those contributions and start growing it. So when you get to a certain age, you'll have that nice lump sum to be able to deploy into other assets.
And there is another Real Estate Law Podcast quick take. For the full episode, please go to YouTube or iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to or heard that quick take. We're also on realestatelawpodcast.com, where you can get all of our episodes and information about the show. On behalf of attorney broker Rory Gill, this is Jason Muth. Thank you for listening.